Let's bring in our next guest. His name is Dave Zirin, and he's one of my favorite journalists out there. He covers sports the right way with a political angle to it. He does not beat around the bush, and his website, Edge of Sports, you can check out his weekly columns. They're fantastic, and he's also the sports editor for The Nation, and wrote a blog on The Nation that showed up last night called Why We Should All Root for the Miami Heat, and we're lucky to have him on tonight to explain it. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
How are you?
Doing well. L.A. Kings, what can you say?
Not much to say. You know, the last time they were in the finals, the Habs beat them, and it's a lifetime ago, 19 years. So we know how long this franchise has been yearning for this. So, you know, to the diehards there, we're all real happy for them.
I don't think I needed to hear Dr. Feelgood from the gate system after they won the title, but I mean, other than the Motley Crue montage, I thought it was a beautiful moment.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was a beautiful moment on mute, Dave, which happens a lot in sports, I find. There's nothing wrong with playing a little music and hitting that mute button and just watching the events unfold. But needless to say, tomorrow night, the NBA finals start up, and there's a lot of hype going on. And I loved your article. I thought it was fantastic the way that it sort of lays it all out there for everybody. Now, the consensus in the United States, or at least in the basketball-watching world, is that the Heat are the bad guys.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. No, they have done a classic white hat, black hat narrative at this, with a lot of it centering on Oklahoma City Thunder star Kevin Durant and Miami Heat's LeBron James, with either LeBron being the anti-Durant or Durant being the anti-LeBron. The emphasis, of course, being on the fact that one of them, and I'll give you three guesses who that one is, and the first two don't count, is the selfish modern superstar who goes to greener pastures and breaks a small market town's heart. And the other is the kind of person who you wish every NBA player was. And in extension, the two teams as well. The Oklahoma City Thunder, they did it the right way, built through the draft, young team, patient, developing talents. And then the other team, a kind of pastiche of free agents trying to assemble a dream team on the fly, as if the Heat win, it rewards one method, and if the Thunder wins, it rewards another. And what was driving me nuts when I was reading a lot of these, you know, very easy narratives is like this there was something missing. And you said it in the intro. It's like if we're really going to look at rewarding one method over another, are we really going to reward a team in the Oklahoma City Thunder that absolutely absconded with that franchise from the city of Seattle in a way that was so underhanded, so dirty? I mean, you mentioned the movie Sonic's Gate. People can go to sonicsgate.com and see the whole ins and outs of the story itself. But the idea that somehow it was almost like you know, that little thing they have in the Men in Black movies where you look at the little light and you forget about what occurred. I mean, it's been amazing. It's as if what happened to the Sonics didn't happen. And the kind of stupid comments. I've gotten a lot of very smart dissents from what I wrote saying, nah, we should root for the Heat because I don't want to see Oklahoma City Thunder owner Clay Bennett rewarded. I don't want to see him holding up a trophy. And I've gotten a lot of smart responses to that saying, I disagree. We can't be rooting for teams based on who the owner is, or look at Heat owner Mickey Arison, and these are his collective sins, so how are you going to like him over the other guys? And yet some of the comments that have been just so idiotic, like hey, at least the team sells out in Oklahoma City and they didn't sell out in Seattle, as if there wasn't, a 40-year history of support in the city of Seattle, and, B, as if we're just going to conveniently forget that the Seattle Supersonics were a team that won the Pacific Division title back when there was such a thing. And yet, remember what happened after that. The team was systematically taken apart for the sole purpose of bleeding out fan interest so they could justify moving the team to Oklahoma City.
Dave, it's a story that we know all too well, and I realized when you gave me your number today that you're based in Washington, D.C., aren't you?
Oh, yeah. So I got the other end of it, too.
Yeah, well, that's...
I better believe it.
Well, you've had it, and I guess, I don't know if you're raised there or not, but I'd imagine that the generation
before... I'm a Mets fan. I'm from New York City, but I've lived in D.C. 17 years, and I've seen the evolution of the Washington Nationals franchise, and it is like the human centipede, and if people have seen that movie, they know how disgusting that simile just was. But it's like we're on the other end of it, where you've got the Montreal Expos and then coming here to the Washington Nationals. And being on the other end of it, I got to tell you, is as queasy as being on the Montreal end of things. Just as I would like to think there's some people in Oklahoma City who feel as queasy as the people of Seattle feel today, because, you know, I'm here in D.C. and I saw the whole thing, the payoffs to the city council people to get the stadium built, the way the popular sentiment in D.C. was overridden to give $1 billion to build a new stadium there, even in advance of us even having an ownership group here in Washington, D.C., the way old feelings were exploited, the way the feelings of Montreal were forgotten. Yeah, the way the entire history of the Expos, whether you're talking Gary Carter, Tim Raines, Tim Wallach, Charlie Lee, Bill Lee, I mean, the whole Andre Dawson, the whole amazing, cool Ellis Valentine, who's on this show. I'm so excited, honored to be on the same show as Ellis Valentine. I mean, the fact that all of this just becomes systematically erased, Men in Black style. And it's you know, it's Frank Howard time again, as if it's the Washington Senators reincarnated. And it's queasy and it's disgusting. And maybe I'm just sensitive because I'm from Brooklyn. My dad's from Brooklyn, and I was raised with stories of Walter O'Malley and how he stole the Brooklyn Dodgers and moved them to L.A. Like, I think I was 10 years old when my dad said to me, what do you do if you have Hitler, Stalin, and Walter O'Malley in a room and you got a gun with two bullets? I was 10 years old, and I'm like, Daddy, don't tell me this joke. But my dad said, no, son, it's a good one. You got Hitler, Stalin, Walter O'Malley, gun with two bullets. You shoot O'Malley twice to make sure the bastard's dead. And so this idea that sports is somehow, oh, well, it's just a business, and wherever you can go to greener pastures, you go. And it's all as if cities, municipalities, communities don't have a stake in them as institutions, as if they're not like family heirlooms you pass on from one generation to the next. Very sensitive to that. Last thing I want to see is the Oklahoma City Thunder rewarded.
You alluded to it on Twitter earlier tonight, Dave, that the only franchise that's run properly is Green Bay. Now, as a sports fan, as somebody who grew up loving sports and feeling devotion to teams, one who's not there anymore, where does the modern sports fan go? Should they be looking to amateur sports or at the collegiate level? It almost seems like it's come to the point where it's too hard to get involved with a team, because the reality of the situation is, unless it's the Red Sox or the Yankees, they could go somewhere.
No, that's exactly right. But I think there's another option. And of course, once you start treading into collegiate sports, at least on the Division I level in the United States, you've entered a sewer the likes of which it makes professional sports seem like a shiny, happy, G-rated movie. So that's always a tough sell. I think we have to be vigilant sports fans. And I know that's tough, and I know a lot of us, myself included, often go to sports to escape. But there has to be a way in which, like, we're both cheering for our team, cheering for our favorite players, but also raising this issue. If public money is going into these franchises, why isn't the question of public ownership raised as well? Why have we become so conditioned, and so many sports fans have been so conditioned to think, well, you either give $1 billion to somebody who already has $1 billion or expect your team to leave. And we've become so complacent with that kind of a status quo. And I think we have to break out of that trap and start raising much bigger questions and saying, you know what, this is, you know, pro sports in North America has been around since the late 19th century. It's only been in the last generation that this paradigm has been imposed on us, where it's like the public pays for sports, not just by tickets and not just if they're sports fans, but it's taken out of their pockets forcibly. And if anybody dares say a peep about it, well, guess what? The Seattle Sonics of Slick Watts, Jack Sikma, Gary Payton, Sean Kemp magically become the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I know everybody loves them, but their name still sounds like a bad roller derby team to me. I hate that name, the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I hate the fact that it makes it somehow even worse to me that they do have this terrific franchise with incredibly likable players, because it's a franchise that was ill-gotten. And I don't care how good their PR machine is, it'll always be a team to me that's caked in original sin.
And just to be clear, it's nothing to do with Durant or Westbrook or Collison or any of the guys. It's purely about what's going on behind the scenes.
Exactly. And once again, people have been tweeting to me all day, well, look at Mickey Arison, look at other owners. And while I have to say, I do believe there is such a thing as lesser evilism when it comes to owners, that there are some certainly who are better than others, more responsible than others, et cetera, et cetera. The thing about the Thunder is it's in a whole different category. It's in the Bob Irsay Colts category. It's in the Walter O'Malley Brooklyn Dodgers category. It's in Jeffrey Loria, that guy who somehow perfected the human centipede all by himself. He uses his own head as a rectal thermometer 365 days a year. These are people who, to me, in the history of ownership in pro sports, are in their own category. People who have taken great pleasure in not only taking cities hostage, but executing the hostage as well and taking the money.
We're just finishing up with Dave Zirin from The Nation.
Are we really?
Sports. I know. Jay's having too much fun, and frankly, I want to continue this. I want to get your thoughts, Dave, just before we let you go on the Pacquiao fight on Saturday night.
Oh, I mean, it's so interesting. It's like, what do you say about this? I mean, you almost want to be like, okay, boxing is corrupt and venal. Pacquiao won the fight. Bob Arum is the Dick Cheney of boxing promoters. Film at 11. I mean, I remember Jimmy Cannon wrote 50 years ago that boxing is the red light district of sports. I mean, this is like that fight was like the red light district crossed with a crack epidemic. I mean, it was so awful to anybody who actually gave their money to that fight. Pacquiao clearly won. The statistics speak for themselves. Bradley also tweeting out the poster of the fight. I mean, the thing about it, you know who, honestly, like it really should have given night sweats to is the National Football League. Cause I think it's like to the NFL, it's you're the number one sport in North America in terms of the kind of money you produce and in terms of the amount of eyes on your product. If you don't clean up your game, if you don't figure out this concussion mess, if you don't figure out these class action lawsuits, this is your future.
Yeah, Dave.
Your future is boxing.
Dave, the thing that gave it away for me was not necessarily the judge's decision at the end of the fight. It was Pacquiao's complacency at the end, where he says, yes, absolutely, I would like a rematch, like a robot up there. And I said, something stinks here. You know, that's really what got me.
Yeah, something stinks here, and it wasn't just the seat of Bob Arum's pants. I mean, these are people. I mean, and I say that as someone who's met Bob Arum. This is a smelly man. These are not people that you want to be around for too long. The stink that boxing puts on the world of sports. But this is the thing, though. When you have violent sports and you don't figure out a way to regulate that violence, what you do is you turn off consumers and you turn off people who potentially could be a part of the sport. And this is the slippery slope that the NFL faces if they don't figure their own business out, a sideshow violent sport that actually draws in the worst people to run it and produces decisions just like this.
Dave Zirin from the Edge of Sports and The Nation. Read his stuff every week. Thank you so much for your time tonight. We really appreciate it.
My privilege, and much love and respect to Mr. Ellis Valentine.
We'll speak to you soon.
Sounds good.
There he goes, Dave Zirin.